Brubaker reined in and pointed to the towering column of smoke rising in the distance.
Morton said he'd send us a smoke signal. You reckon that's it?
That looks like too much smoke to be a signal. That's from a big fire.
But it's in the direction we're headed, ain't it?
It is. So I guess we don't have any choice but to keep going. I just hope the scratch isn't right in the middle of it.
As expected, the Parker County Sheriff hadn't been happy to have three dead men lying in the street outside the livery stable. Neither was the Weatherford City Marshal. At least the elderly hostler had yelped because he was scared and diving for cover, not because he'd been hit by one of the flying bullets. If an innocent citizen had been cut down, that would have made the local star packers even less inclined to cut Bo and Brubaker any slack. As it was, Brubaker's standing as a federal lawman, plus the fact that the dead men were all members of a somewhat shady clan from Arkansas, convinced the local authorities to allow Bo and Brubaker to go on their way.
The way the wind's blowing, that fire's gonna move fast. And as dry as everything is, anybody who got caught out in the front of a blaze like that'd be in a heap of trouble.
I know. I've seen some pretty bad wildfires. I'm not sure I've been around one when the conditions are as perfect for destruction as they are today, though.
Well, keep an eye on that smoke. If it starts to get too close, we'll have to turn around and head back. At least until the fire burns itself out.
And what about Scratch?
I reckon he'll be on his own. Same way he has been ever since he rode off with that devil woman.
As soon as the name Hank came out of Kara's mouth, Scratch knew what had happened. He didn't have any idea how or why, but he was certain that Hank Gentry and the rest of the gang had somehow beaten them to the hideout. Scratch knew this meant that Kara had no need of him anymore. No need whatsoever. And to her warped mind, that would mean she might as well go ahead and shoot him. So he ducked, shot out a hand, and grabbed the rifle's barrel as she pointed it at him. He wrenched it up and to the side just in time. Scratch ripped the Winchester out of her grasp before she could work the rifle's lever and try again to shoot him. He didn't throw the gun aside because he heard horses pounding toward them and knew that Gentry and the other men were responding to her cry. He was outnumbered 6-1, so he didn't hold out any hope of surviving this fight. But he planned to take as many of the varmints with him as he could, so he might need the Winchester. He didn't get the chance, because Kara threw herself at him. He felt a couple of her fingernails gouge fiery lines down his cheeks before he was finally able to grab her wrists and hold her off. But by then it was too late, because the six riders surrounded them, and every man had a gun in his hand, pointing at the silver-haired Texan.
Kara, is it really you? By God, it is. It really is.
Hank Gentry smiled grimly.
You'd better let go of her, mister. At this range, we can blow you to doll rags without hitting Kara.
Scratch knew the threat was true. He looked intently into Kara's face, only inches from his, and played the only card in his hand.
I'm gonna let you go, but don't you come after me again. You got no reason to want me dead. I've done nothing but help you.
He let go of her wrists and took a step back, lifting his hands so they would be well away from his Remingtons. These outlaws might well kill him anyway, but he didn't want to give them an excuse to start shooting.
You haven't done anything but help me. If you hadn't stopped me in Fort Smith, I would have gotten away. I wish I'd cut your throat then.
She looked like she was about to start after him again, but Gentry reached down from the saddle and rested a hand on her shoulder.
Kara, take it easy. It's a miracle we all wound up here together, but you need to settle down. Who is this old fella?
He's a lawman. He's working for that damn Judge Parker.
Is that true, mister?
I was, but only temporary-like. A saddle pardon I signed on to help one of Parker's full-time deputies deliver some prisoners to Texas. But I gave up on that job when something better came along.
His glance at Kara made it clear what that something better was. Gentry's face hardened slightly.
You been up to your old tricks, Kara? Playing up to a fella to get him to do whatever you want like you did with me?
Kara just folded her arms across her rapidly rising and falling breasts and glared at Scratch.
You probably didn't care that he's old enough to be your grandpa. You figured anybody wearing pants is fair game for your little schemes, don't you?
You got it all wrong, mister. I just wanted to help out the little lady. She told me she never set out to be an owl hoot. She was forced into it.
Oh, she told you that, did she? Keep him covered.
Gentry swung down from the saddle and pulled Kara into his embrace.
What are you doing here? Where are Dayton and Jim?
I wasn't able to get them loose and bring them with me. I barely escaped myself.
By getting this old-timer here to help you?
That's right.
You had to know that I was coming after you. You knew I would never let you hang.
I knew that.
So why did you come after the loot that was hidden here?
I figured I'd retrieve it so we'd have it when you caught up to me. Indian Territory's too hot for us now, Hank, just like Texas was. I was thinking we ought to head west. To Arizona, maybe, or California.
Speaking of hot, that fire there is getting closer while we're sitting here jawing.
Bouchard's right. We'll hash out everything later, Kara. Right now, I'm just damn glad to see you again. Question is, what do we do with you, mister?
Morton.
What?
That's my name, Scratch Morton. Now listen here, you owe me for getting Miss LaChance loose from the law and bringing her here. She'd have been locked up by now in Tyler if it wasn't for me. You want to be fair about it, you'll take me with you.
Make you part of the gang, you mean?
I turned my back on my old part in the law. I got nothing to go back to. I've skirted pretty close to the shady side plenty of times in my life. I might as well go all the way.
You got gall, I'll give you that.
At my age, why the hell not?
What do you think? Take him along or kill him?
Oh, hell, we might as well take him at least for now. He's pretty good in a fight.
Do I need to ask you to turn your guns over, Morton?
You don't think I'm loco enough to slap leather against all six of you boys, do you?
I guess not. But I'll be keeping an eye on you. And if you try anything even a little funny, I'll blow a hole in you.
Well, that's fair enough. Right now, I just want to get out of here before that fire catches up to us.
I don't blame you for that. We'll ride south until we're clear of it and then swing to the west.
Gentry and Kara both mounted their horses. The other men holstered their guns, but they watched Scratch closely as he swung up into his saddle. Somehow, he was still alive, and he was more than a little surprised by that. If he could stay that way, he thought, maybe Bo and Brubaker would catch up to them and be able to pull his fat out of the fire. Of course, with the smell of hell itself thick in the air, that might not be the best way of thinking about it, he told himself. But no matter how you put it, he knew that his life was now in the hands of his old friend and the deputy marshal from Arkansas. And whatever fate guided the wildfire that was now racing across the Texas countryside toward them. Brubaker lowered the field glasses from his eyes.
That's Gentry, all right. The big fellow with the shaggy gray hair is his second in command, Chet Ryan. The red-headed hombre's named Bouchard. He's been with Gentry for quite a while, too. The other three are just run-of-the-mill hard cases. I probably got reward dodgers on them somewhere, but I can't recall their names.
I thought Gentry had more than a dozen men riding with him.
He did. I reckon they must have split off on their own in the Indian Territory.
I thought he was going to try to rescue those prisoners, too, and yet he's here in Texas. From the looks of the loads on those pack horses they got with him, they've already been to the hideout and recovered the loot.
Don't ask me how some damn outlaw thinks. But if I had to guess, I'd say he was planning on leaving Kara and the other two to the hangman and taking off for parts unknown with the money. Once Kara figures that out, I'd sleep with one eye open if I was Gentry.
We can't give him enough time for that to happen. They're taking Scratch with them. We have to go after them and help him.
That's the plan. And if we can kill or capture the whole bunch while we're doing it, that's even better.
They stuck to whatever cover they could, not wanting Gentry's men to spot them as they closed in. The smoke grew thicker. Bo kept a wary eye on the gray clouds.
It looks like Gentry intends to skirt the southern edge of the fire, but I'm not sure they can get around it.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. If they'd headed east, they would have come right to us. Could have set up an ambush.
They're abandoning Low and Elam, like you said. Taking that loot and heading west for greener pastures.
No honor among thieves, that's for damn sure. Look yonder.
Bo looked to the south. Like a giant gray finger pointing to the heavens, another column of smoke had sprung up.
This wind can carry sparks a long way. Looks like another fire's broken out.
And it won't take long for that bigger one to join up with it. They'll never get around the fires going that direction now. They're gonna have to turn back. And when they do, we're gonna be ready for them.
Hank Gentry and Kara LaChance were riding in front of the group, and they both slowed their horses as gray smoke began to climb into the sky ahead of them. Scratch saw it too and knew what it meant. The wildfire had been spreading rapidly, and the main body of smoke now loomed over the valley where they rode. But this was a new fire, caused, no doubt, by sparks flying from the first conflagration and carried by the wind. And once the blazes linked up, they would bar the way completely.
Oh, we better turn around now, Hank. Looks like we can't get through the south and west anymore.
Gentry and Kara had brought their mounts to a halt, causing the others to follow suit. The outlaw leader frowned at the smoke in the sky. Kara lifted a hand to point at the gray columns.
Look, those are still two separate fires. We can go between them.
Oh, it's too risky. We'd have fires closing in from both sides.
But if we make it, no one will ever catch us. Come on.
Gentry rode toward the open area between the massive clouds of smoke to the right and the smaller column to the left. Kara didn't hesitate. She urged her horse forward right alongside his. Scratch saw Ryan and Bouchard look at each other again and knew that Gentry's men were considering a mutiny. That might be his best bet for getting away. But then Ryan shrugged and Bouchard nodded. They sent their horses after Gentry and Kara. Scratch had no choice but to follow. The riders headed more toward the southwest now, angling for that narrow gap and moving fast. It was a race against the flames and the wind, a race that Scratch figured they were destined to lose. He wasn't going to let the fires claim his life. That was no way for a man to cross the divide. If it came down to it, he thought, as the smoke stung his eyes and rasped in his nose and throat, he would whip out the Remingtons and open fire, gunning down as many of the outlaws as he could before they killed him. At least that way his death would accomplish something, and it would be quick.
This is crazy! We can't make it, Hank! We got to turn and head for Weatherford!
Gentry slowed his horse enough to twist in the saddle and look back at the others.
We're not turning back! We have to keep moving, that's our only chance!
Hank, we can't!
Gentry hauled back hard on the reins, wheeling his horse in a tight turn that left him facing the others, who also brought their mounts to a stop. Reaching down to his holster, Gentry pulled his gun and leveled it at the man who was complaining.
You want to cut and run the other way, go ahead, Temple. Well, you'll go without your share of the loot, understand?
Damn it, Hank!
It's up to you, but make up your mind fast because we're running out of time.
All right, Blasted. Let's go. I don't want that fire to get me.
I'm glad you came to your senses. Let's ride!
The delay, brief though it had been, had just made the situation worse, Scratch saw. The gap in the smoke had almost closed. As the riders reached the southern end of the valley and started up a long, fairly steep slope, the billowing clouds to the west surged even nearer. Scratch leaned forward in the saddle. The heavily loaded pack horses couldn't climb the rise very quickly. The group of riders strung out, with Gentry and Kara in front, followed by Ryan and Bouchard, then Scratch, then the three outlaws leading the pack horses bringing up the rear. As Scratch looked around, he realized this might be his last chance to make a break for it. Up ahead, Gentry and Kara reached the top of the slope. Scratch saw them bring their horses to frantic skidding stops. Then they whirled the mounts around and raced back toward the others. A wall of flame exploded over the rise and shot after them like a thing alive.
Move! Move!
Gentry's stubborn determination to make it through to the other side of the fire and use the flames to cut off any pursuit had vanished in the face of the inferno. They had to flee as if hell itself were after them, which it pretty much was. The riders scattered, spreading out as they tried to outrace the blaze. Scratch glanced over his shoulder and saw that the flames were leaping 6 to 8 feet in the air.
Head for the hideout! We'll be safe there!
The cave was a couple of miles away, and as they drew close enough to see the area of the ridge where it was located, Scratch saw that the flames had already engulfed it. The others realized that as well and pulled their horses to a stop.
Well, we can't make it back now! Now what we do?
We'll make a run to the east, that's all that's left!
How can it do that? It's like the wind's blowing from all directions at once!
There was some truth to that. The wind was strong enough to start with, and the heat of the blaze just whipped it up more. Folks were mostly helpless in the face of a disaster like this. The fire went where it wanted to go and did what it wanted to do, and people had to just stay out of its way as best as they could and pray that they survived. Scratch wondered where Bo and Brubaker were. They were supposed to rendezvous with him in this area, but surely the smoke had warned them of the danger and they'd had sense enough to stay away. It was bad enough that he was probably going to die here. He didn't want his old friend to meet the same fate. Bo grew more worried as he and Brubaker crossed the valley toward the fire. The column of smoke to the south was getting bigger all the time, and the original fire continued to rush eastward. Any sane man would turn his horse around and ride hell-bent for leather away from here. Bo wasn't sure that Brubaker was completely sane anymore, though. The deputy had a look of intense determination on his face, as if he wouldn't let hell itself stand between him and the outlaws he intended to bring to justice. And Scratch was still out there somewhere, too, threatened by the fiery onslaught. After all they had been through together, Bo wasn't just about to abandon his old friend without making every effort to find him. He had tried to keep his eyes on the distant riders, but the terrain and the ever-thickening smoke made that impossible. Bo didn't know where Scratch and the others were anymore. He and Brubaker were just riding blindly up and down the valley now, searching for any sign of them.
Oh, we ain't gonna be able to stand this much longer, Creel. I hate to say it, but the fire's probably caught up with them by now.
I don't believe that.
You don't want to believe it, but it's true.
Maybe Scratch is dead, but I'm not going to believe it until I see it with my own eyes.
And I ain't turning back as long as there's still a chance I can corral Gentry and the LaChance girl and the others. So I reckon that means we keep going.
We keep going.
They rode on warily, not wanting to run right into their quarry without any warning, although that was becoming more and more possible as the visibility worsened. Some instinct made Bo lift his head and look up at the top of the ridge. Flames danced among the trees there, giant flames that leaped and cavorted madly as the wind whipped them. Like an army charging into battle, once the flames topped the ridge, they rushed down the slope. Their speed was incredible. As the heat beat against their faces, Bo and Brubaker were forced to swing their horses around and gallop away from the tongues of fire reaching out for them.
What the hell? It's on all sides of us now! How did it fall?
Bo spotted something in front of them that might represent a faint hope of survival. A line of trees marked what might be the course of a creek. He reined his horse closer to Brubaker's and slapped the lawman's shoulder to get his attention. He pointed to the trees. Brubaker nodded and kicked his horse into a faster run. Both men galloped toward the trees, which would provide more fuel for the fire when the flames reached them, but might also signify a place of sanctuary, perilous though it might be. As Bo came up to the trees, he saw how the earth dropped away on the other side of them, forming a deep gully. At the bottom of it flowed a creek, no more than 5 feet wide. From the looks of the banks, in normal times the creek was bigger and deeper than it was now, but the drought had shrunk it. It had to be fed by springs in the surrounding hills, or it would have gone entirely dry by now. Bo was swinging down from his saddle by the time his horse came to a stop. He yanked his Winchester from the saddle boot and swatted the animal on the rump with the barrel. The horse let out a startled cry and leaped forward.
The horse can't get down there. We have to let him go.
Brubaker nodded. They half climbed, half slid down the steep banks of the gully until their boots splashed into the water. The banks were mostly dirt and rock, which was good. Only a few gnarled bushes that had grown there stubbornly would burn. Cinders began to rain down around the two men.
Get in the water!
Bo took his hat off and soaked it in the creek, then draped it over his face, which he lifted out of the water so he could breathe. The creek water was cold, and that helped, because the heat of the flames was intense. Bo's eyes were squeezed closed, but red sparks shot across his vision anyway. He felt the world start to spin crazily around him, and he knew he was on the verge of passing out.
So long, pard.
Wait! Look up there!
Scratch looked where Kara was pointing, and hope leaped in his chest. This was a different section of the ridge from the one where the gang's hideout had been located, but the dark blotch on the side of the slope could only be the mouth of another cave.
Come on, bring those pack horses!
The nearness of the fire made the horses more skittish than ever. The riders had to fight to control them and send them in the direction of the onrushing flames. They managed to do it, though, and climbed slowly but steadily toward the cave. It wasn't really much of a cave, Scratch saw as they came closer. It was more of an overhang with a sheltered area underneath it. But the whole area was rock, and that meant there was nothing there to burn. Right now, that was mighty welcome. The heat and smoke combined to make every breath searingly painful. Floating ashes filled the air and stung bare skin when they landed on it, as well as charring holes in clothing. If by some miracle he lived through this, Scratch thought as they crowded into the cavern-like space, he would never look at a campfire the same way again. The area under the overhang was barely big enough for 7 men, 1 woman, and 10 horses. The panicky animals presented the biggest problem.
Whatever you do, hang on to those pack horses. Let your saddlemounts go if you have to, but don't lose that loot.
Scratch found himself pressing his back against the rock wall at the rear of the protected space. The burly gray-haired outlaw named Ryan was to his left. To his right were Gentry and Karen. The leader of the gang looped one arm around the blonde while he used his other hand to hang onto the reins attached to their horses.
Hank, I have to know something. What made you come out here to the hideout instead of trying to rescue me?
I was going to rescue you. You know, I never would have let you hang, sweetheart. I planned to save Dayton and Jim, too, while I was at it, but you're the only one I really care about.
But Brubaker was taking me to Tyler! That's more than 100 miles east of here! And you weren't following us.
I sent men to the crossings along the Red River. Once I realized that that lawman was cutting across Indian territory, I had to find out where you were.
I know about that. We ran into some kid named Nesbitt.
Oh, early Nesbitt. He was working for me, Kara. I plan to go back and check with all those spies and find out which way you'd gone.
That's what the kids said. But it doesn't make sense, Hank. Even if you doubled back after you got the loot, you wouldn't have had time to find us and get away from that law dog before we were locked up in Tyler.
Don't you worry about any of that, Kara. We're together now, and that's all that matters. We were lucky enough to find this place, and as soon as the fire goes on past us, we'll get out of here. Folks around these parts will be too busy trying to recover from this disaster to worry about us. We'll be out of Texas before you know it.
Maybe.
Better get your bandanas out and soak them in water from the canteens. Ooh, then tie them around your face and breathe through them. Woo!
That was a good idea, Scratch thought. He soaked his bandana and tied it on, and that helped with the smoke. The others really looked like outlaws now, with their faces masked, and he supposed he did too. This cave-like area was about 50 feet up the face of the ridge. Down below, the flames had reached the valley. The grass and the trees and the brush were burning furiously, sending even more smoke into the air. Scratch's lungs burned and ached. His hope now was that the wind would keep blowing as hard as it had been all day, because then the fire would move on quickly and burn itself out behind the leading edge of the flames, once all the dry vegetation was consumed. Right now, though, it was still pretty bad out there. If Kara hadn't spotted this sanctuary, they would all be dead by now.
Kara, what are you—
Shut up, you lying son of a bitch!
Scratch's head jerked around. He looked over to see Kara holding a revolver in both hands and pointing it at Gentry. Gentry's holster was empty, which told Scratch that Kara had snatched the weapon from it. He had been pretty sure that Gentry hadn't sweet-talked Kara out of her suspicion of him, and what was happening now confirmed that.
Kara, stop! Put the gun down, damn it!
No! You double-crossed me, Hank! I never would have believed it of you, but you did. I kept telling Creel and Martin and Brubaker that you'd be coming after me, and I knew with all my heart that you would. I knew you'd never let me hang, but you would have! You didn't care if they hanged me as long as you got your money!
Kara, you're not thinking straight. You know I love you. I never let any harm come to you.
If that was true, you wouldn't have made a beeline for that loot. You'd have come after me instead. You're a son of a bitch, Hank. I don't like it, but it's true.
You think I couldn't find a dozen more women like you? You little harlot. With my share of this loot, I could get 100 women like you.
You're wrong, Hank. You don't know how wrong you are, but you're about to learn.
Somebody take that gun away from her.
Nobody made a move toward Kara.
I don't hold anything against these other boys. They were just doing what you told them to. But you, Hank, you were supposed to come for me and you didn't. You let me down and now you're gonna pay for it.
You can't fight all of us.
I don't have to. I'm the boss of this gang now. Ain't that right, boys?
All we want is our share, Kara.
You'll get it.
You bastard. Shit, don't let him get away with this.
I'm starting to wonder if we might not be better off working for Kara. She planned most of her jobs anyway, didn't you, Hank?
Oh, you...
Get out of here! I can't stand the sight of you anymore!
But there's nowhere to go! The whole world's on fire out there!
That's your problem. Back away from me, Hank! I swear if you don't, I'll shoot you dead where you stand!
Fellas, I'll give up my share. You can split it among you. Just stop this crazy bitch!
I think you're giving up your share anyway, Hank!
Gentry backed toward the edge of the area under the overhang.
Kara, you can't do this. Not after all we've meant to each other. Please.
Oh, hell.
A smile tugged at the corners of Gentry's mouth. He believed that he had won her over at last, Scratch thought. He found out a second later just how wrong he was, as Kara lowered the barrel of the gun a little and blew his right knee apart.
Oh, Kara, please.
Kara blew his other leg out from under him. Gentry went over backward. The slope was steep enough that he started to roll out of control as he bounced and plunged. He landed in the middle of a stretch of blazing brush. Kara had moved up to the edge, so she had a better view of her former lover's torment. She lowered the gun as she stared raptly at Gentry.
He had it coming. He let me down and he had it coming. I reckon he's been punished enough.
She looked over at Ryan and gave him a curt nod. The burly man lifted the rifle to his shoulder, took a second to make sure of his aim, and then fired. Gentry's head snapped back. The slug drilled cleanly through his brain, putting him out of his misery. Kara turned to face the other men, obviously putting Gentry behind her for good.
Anybody have any objection to me running things from now on?
Oh, no. We never did have any objection. As far as we are concerned, you and Hank were always both in charge of this here bunch.
All right. Wait until the fire dies down and then we'll head west. Scratch, you're welcome to ride with us if you want to. Ain't that right?
Nobody spoke up.
Yeah, well, I'm much obliged for the invite, Kara.
She smiled at him. And when she did, she appeared as sweet and innocent as ever. Until you looked past her down the slope and saw the smoking husk of Hank Gentry. Beau kept slipping in and out of consciousness, aware only of the heat, the cold water, and the mud in which he lay, and the shortness of breath that made his lungs ache. Finally, it was water blowing up his nose that brought him back to sputtering, flailing awareness. He saw a streak of blue overhead, and it seemed to take him an hour to figure out what he was looking at. The smoke was thinning. That was a strip of blue sky up there above him. That meant the fire had moved on, and he was alive. He rolled onto his side. His hat had started to float away on the creek. Without thinking too much about what he was doing, he reached out to snag it. Then he lifted his head and looked around. Jake Brubaker was still lying in the little stream, too. At first, Beau thought the deputy was dead. But then he saw Brubaker's chest rising and falling and knew that he had just passed out the same way Beau had. He pulled himself through the mud until he was lying next to Brubaker. Putting a hand behind the lawman's head, he dipped up some water in his hat and splashed it in Brubaker's face.
Take it easy, 42. You're all right. We both made it through the fire.
What? What? Creel, say you?
Yeah, we're both alive. Smoke's thinning out overhead. The fire's moved on.
The clothes of both men were soaked and covered with mud.
We look like a couple of hogs in a wallow.
Yeah, at least we're not a couple of dead hogs.
Yeah. Feels like my insides are blistered.
Yeah, mine too. We both breathed too much smoke. It'll be a while before we get over it.
That won't keep me from trying to find those varmints we're after. We should have just taken those prisoners to Tyler and been done with it.
In hindsight, that was probably right, Beau thought. But Kara's approach to Scratch had given them the chance to recover that missing loot. So he had thought it was a gamble worth taking. Not all bets paid off, though, and this one might have cost Scratch's life. That thought made Beau's face settle into grim lines.
We need to see if we can find Scratch and the others.
Fire's bound to have gotten him. Nothing could have lived through that inferno.
We did.
That was just a stroke of blind luck. If we hadn't found this creek, we'd be dead by now.
Well, maybe they had some luck, too. We have to find out.
I don't know how we're going to do that without horses, but I guess the first thing to do is climb out of this gully, ain't it?
Beau helped Brubaker to his feet. Both men clapped their dripping hats on their heads and picked up their rifles. They kept sliding back down as they tried to make their way up the bank, but eventually they reached the top and crawled out of the gully that had saved their lives. They found themselves looking at a landscape out of a nightmare. Except for patches of blue in the sky, all the color appeared to have been blasted out of the world. There was nothing but gray and black as far as the eye could see. Ashes covered the ground. Gaunt black skeletons of trees jutted up here and there. The brush was just a tangle of charred limbs, and in some places it had burned all the way to the ground, leaving sharp little stubs sticking up.
Good Lord, I ain't never seen anything like this before.
I have. Scratch and I rode through the Yellowstone country a while back after they'd had a big fire like this one. It was probably started by lightning. It looked about like this. Miles and miles of nothing but destruction. But it grew back. Next time we were there, you couldn't even see any signs of the fire unless you looked for them. And even then, it was hard to find them. New growth had come along and repaired all the damage. Nature's like that.
Maybe so, but this sure looks terrible right now.
I can't argue with that. We'll have to watch where we're walking. There are still places that'll be pretty hot. Might burn right through our boots.
I reckon we should head for that ridge. That was the last place we saw Morton in that bunch.
Beau agreed with that decision. They started trudging toward the ridge, which was about half a mile away. They hadn't gone very far when Beau stopped short.
Listen, you hear that?
Brubaker lifted his head and listened with a look of intense concentration on his face. After a few seconds, his eyes widened in surprise.
That sounds like a horse.
Those are hoofbeats, all right. And I don't think anybody else is likely to be moving around out here except the folks we're looking for.
How in the world did they survive, and with their horses, too?
I don't know, but maybe we can find out.
We better hunt some cover until we're sure what we're dealing with.
Brubaker jerked his head in a nod.
Damn right, come on!
The rocks weren't big enough to provide much cover, but they were better than nothing, and certainly better than burned trees and brush, which wouldn't conceal much of anything. Bo and Brubaker knelt behind the largest of the boulders and waited as the steady thudding of hoofbeats came closer. Bo's breath caught in his tortured throat as the first rider came into view around a little knob. He recognized Kara LaChance instantly. She rode with a rifle held across the saddle in front of her, and she had gotten hold of a holstered revolver and gun belt, which she had strapped around her waist. The next rider was the slender, red-headed, fox-like man Brubaker had called Bouchard. Bo's heart sank. He had hoped to see Scratch following Kara. Then his spirits leaped as the third rider appeared. The fancy duds and the cream-colored Stetson were grimy from smoke and ashes, but there was no mistaking Scratch. As far as Bo could tell, his old friend was all right. He didn't see any bloodstains on Scratch's clothes, and the silver-haired Texan was riding easily enough. Big, shaggy Chet Ryan came next, followed by the three hard cases leading the pack horses.
Where in Blazes is Gentry?
Blazes is probably right. Fire must have got him.
At the front of the group, Kara rode with her head held high, and her attitude made it clear that she was now in charge of this bunch. Bo supposed that she had inherited leadership of the gang from Hank Gentry. That didn't really matter. What was important was that the surviving members of the gang were here, and so was the loot they had come after. This was the chance to round them up and recover the stolen money. They wouldn't be expecting anyone else to be around in this burned-out devastation. Bo looked over at Brubaker. The deputy nodded, tightened his hands on his rifle, and suddenly stood up, leveling the Winchester at the outlaws.
Hold it right there! You're under arrest!
Those damn lawmen! Kill them!
She kicked her horse and caused the animal to leap aside, just as Brubaker fired. Kara didn't return Brubaker's fire. She let the others do that, as a storm of lead from Bouchard, Ryan, and the other three hard cases made Bo and the deputy leap for cover behind the rocks again. Kara swung her Winchester toward Scratch instead.
You double-crosser! You led them to us somehow!
Scratch palmed out his Remingtons and guided his horse with his knees as he sent the animal plunging to the side. Kara's rifle cracked, but the shot missed. Bouchard's horse gave a skittish leap just as Scratch fired, taking him into the path of one of the bullets from the silver-haired Texan's gun. Scratch's other shot missed Kara, who whirled her mount and kicked it into a run. A gray cloud of ashes boiled up behind her as she galloped across the hellish landscape. Scratch hated to leave Bo when he had just seen his old pard for the first time in days, but he didn't want Kara to get away. He sent his horse leaping past Bouchard's wildly cavorting mount and leaned forward in the saddle as he pounded after her. He pouched his left-hand iron and used that hand to grip the rein. He was a little surprised that Kara was fleeing. He would have said that she was crazy enough she would want to stay and fight it out. But maybe, for once, self-preservation had gotten the best of the insane rage that filled her. Bo's Winchester kicked hard against his shoulder as he knelt behind the rock and fired. He worked the rifle's lever so fast it was a blur. His bullets sprayed across the space between him and the outlaws. One of the men with the pack horses pitched out of the saddle as a slug tore through him. Next to Bo, Brubaker kept up a deadly fire as well. Bouchard was wounded, and that made it hard for him to control his plunging horse. The deputy drew a bead on him and pressed the trigger. Bouchard's head jerked as the lawman's bullet drilled him. Outlaw lead whined all around them. Brubaker went over backwards. Bo glanced over at him.
I'm all right, damn it, keep shooting!
Bo knew that Brubaker was hit, but they were still outnumbered 3-2. There wasn't time to check on how badly the deputy was hurt. Bo swung his rifle and lined the sights on Ryan's broad chest. Ryan's six gun spurted flame at the same instant that Bo's rifle cracked. The black Stetson flew off Bo's head with a neat hole through its crown from Ryan's bullet. Bo's shot had found its mark. But Ryan didn't fall. Instead, he sent his horse lunging forward, straight at the rocks where Bo and Brubaker had taken cover. He kept firing, slamming shots at the two of them. Brubaker had made it back to his knees. His left arm was clumsy because that was where the bullet had ripped through his flesh. But Bo could tell the bone wasn't broken because Brubaker managed to lift his rifle again. He and Brubaker both fired. And Ryan jerked again, more bloodstains springing out on the outlaw's buckskin shirt like crimson flowers opening. Ryan still didn't go down. His bullets whined off the rock that shielded Bo and Brubaker, coming close enough to make them dive to the sides, one in each direction. Lying on his side on the ground, Bo triggered off the last two rounds in the Winchester. One of them smashed through Ryan's throat and traveled upward at an extreme angle through his brain. The massive body crashed face down across the rock where Bo and Brubaker had taken cover. Lying on his belly, Brubaker sighted in on one of the remaining outlaws and broke the man's right arm with a well-placed slug. That just left one of them, and as Bo tossed his empty rifle aside and came up with Colt in hand, that man turned to light a shuck out of there. Bo sent two shots rocketing over his head. The outlaw hauled back on the reins and then thrust his hands into the air.
Don't shoot! I give up, David! Don't shoot!
Brubaker was already drawing a bead on the man.
He's surrendering, 42. You shoot him now and it'll be murder.
Not if nobody knows about it, but I reckon you're right. I ain't in the habit of gunning down prisoners, no matter what some of those no-account lawyers back in Fort Smith would have you believe.
Get your guns on the ground, mister, and be mighty careful about it. I may need an excuse to shoot you, but I don't need much one.
I'm not gonna give you any.
The outlaw dropped his pistol on the ground.
All right, the others are done for and the pack horses have run off. We're gonna have to catch up some of the saddle mounts and round them up.
What about Scratch and Kara?
The deputy shook his head.
They're gone. She took off for the tall and uncut, and Morton went after her. I lost sight of them while we were swapping lead with the others.
Bo's forehead creased in a worried frown.
I don't know if he was trying to capture her, or if he's really thrown in with her.
Scratch would never do that. He'll bring her back, or die trying.
The fire had burned off all the vegetation, but it hadn't had any effect on the basic terrain. The ridges, the gullies, the rocks all remained, and they prevented Scratch and Kara from racing their horses at top speed. Scratch stayed stubbornly behind her, matching her pace as best he could. At any moment, either of the horses might take a spill in this rugged landscape, but somehow the animals managed to avoid that. Kara topped a rise and disappeared. Scratch reached the crest a moment later and expected to see her descending the far slope. Instead, as his eyes scanned the burned-out wasteland, he didn't spot her. The land fell away in front of him for about a mile in a series of natural terraces, and at the bottom lay a wide stream dotted with sandbars. That was the Brazos River. On the other side of it, more hills rose, but these held at least a hint of green. The drought had muted the color, but it was there, signifying that the fire hadn't burned that side of the river. The blaze must have started somewhere around here. He didn't really care about that. What mattered was that Kara seemed to have disappeared into thin air. Scratch reined in and twisted his head from side to side, searching for her. He didn't see the little gully tucked away in a fold of the hills until she fired at him from it. The Remington in his hand roared as he kicked his horse down the slope toward the gully. He squeezed off three shots that had Kara ducking for cover. Scratch was on top of the gully before he realized it. Suddenly aware that his horse couldn't stop in time, he booted the animal's flanks again and sent it lunging into the air in a daring leap that carried horse and rider all the way over the gully. The horse landed awkwardly, though, and lost its footing. Scratch yanked his feet out of the stirrups and left the saddle in a dive. A cloud of ashes rose around him and choked him as he landed on his shoulder and rolled. Pain shot through him. His old bones didn't take kindly to such punishment. But he was all right, and he came up on a knee with both guns drawn as Kara burst out of the gully mounted on her horse. The revolver in her hand blasted at him. He threw himself to the side and returned the fire as her bullets smacked into the ground beside him, kicking up dirt and more ashes. She was past him in the blink of an eye. Scratch's right hand Remington was empty, but the left hand gun still held a couple of rounds. He lifted it and squeezed them off just as she twisted in the saddle and flung one final shot back at him. Scratch had time to see her body jerk as if she were hit. Then something slammed into his head with tremendous force, knocking him down so that he was stretched out on his back. Tried to get up, but his muscles refused to obey him. Kara was getting away. There was nothing he could do to stop her now. Consciousness had started to slip away from him, and when it went, it would probably take his life with it, he knew.
Sorry, Bo.
Then the darkness took him. There had been a drought in East Texas, too, but nowhere near as bad as the one that gripped the country west of Fort Worth. So even though it was still winter, the countryside around Tyler was considerably greener than it had been over there in the Palo Pinto Hills, where Bo, Scratch, and Brubaker had fought their battle with the gentry gang. The three men looked considerably better, too, as they left the courthouse. They were dressed in clean clothes again. Bo had a new hat to replace the one with the hole shot through it. And although Brubaker's left arm was in a black silk sling, and Scratch had a bandage around his head so that he had to wear his hat cuffed back a little, these were the only outward signs of their injuries. The deputy stopped and pulled a handkerchief from his pocket, coughing into it until the spasms subsided.
I think I'm going to be coughing up ashes the rest of my morning days.
You'll get over it sooner or later, 42.
Yeah, but it'll be a long time before the smell of smoke stops giving you the fan, Todd. Maybe never. I feel the same way.
Well, at least the job's done now. And none too soon to suit me. I'll be glad to get back to Fort Smith. Plan on heading that direction as soon as I've seen the sentence carried out so I can tell Judge Parker I saw the last of the gentry gang swing with my own eyes.
Only it ain't the last of them, is it?
You said you thought you hit Kara with your last shot. She may not have made it.
The three of them had just come from Judge Josiah Southwick's courtroom, where the esteemed federal jurist that Bo and Scratch still knew from their youth as Bigfoot had sentenced Dayton Lowe, Jim Elam, and Cutter Brown to be hanged by the neck until dead. Brown was the outlaw who had surrendered in the violent aftermath of the wildfire, but he had only postponed his fate by doing so. Bo had galloped over the hills and found Scratch lying unconscious on the slope overlooking the Brazos River. Blood and ashes had painted a ghastly pallor over Scratch's face, but he'd been breathing, and once Bo had cleaned up the wound, he had seen that his old friend was only grazed on the side of the head, enough to knock him out, but not enough to kill him. When Scratch had come to, Bo had informed him that that cast-iron skull of his had saved his life again. It had taken the rest of the day to round up some horses and recover those pack animals loaded down with stolen loot. Bo found his horse, which had survived the fire, although its hide was singed in places. They never found any sign of Brubaker's mount. Nobody wanted to spend the night out there in that smoky wasteland, so they had ridden through the darkness back to Weatherford with their prisoner. The wildfire had burned itself out before it reached the town, but it had left a wide swath of devastation through the cross timbers. The area would be a long time recovering from this, but as Bo had said, it would recover. From Weatherford, Brubaker sent a wire to Fort Smith explaining the situation to Judge Parker. Brubaker kept the details of the judge's reply to himself, but Bo got the feeling that Parker had pretty well burned up the telegraph wires. Brubaker didn't seem worried, though. With the exception of Carol LaChance, the entire gentry gang was either scattered, wiped out, or due to hang, so they no longer posed a threat to Indian territory. Losing Kara was a bitter pill to swallow, but telegrams would go out to the chief marshals across the frontier, warning them to have their men keep an eye out for her. If she was still alive, she would turn up sooner or later. The local Sawbones had insisted on keeping Scratch in the hospital for a couple of days. When the doctor pronounced Scratch well enough to travel, the three of them had set out for Gainesville, taking their prisoner with them. Once there, they had picked up Brubaker's wagon, loaded Lowe and Elam into it along with Brown, and headed for Tyler to finish the long journey at last. Brubaker told the local lawman to go ahead and release Early Nesbitt, since they didn't have to worry about Hank Gentry coming after them anymore. Scratch had told them how Kara killed Gentry, confirming for all of them, as if they needed confirmation, that the blonde was plumb loco. When they reached Tyler, Bo and Scratch had had a rather uproarious reunion with Bigfoot Southwick, who momentarily lost the dignity that normally accrued to a federal judge and slapped his old friends on the back. Now, the three men paused on the steps of the courthouse, following the conclusion of the speedy trial.
Are you gonna stay and watch the hanging, too?
You know, I never cared over much for hangings.
We'll trust you to see that justice is done, 42.
You know, we never did play a game.
You need four people for that.
I know. One of those jailers said he'd be glad to sit in and make a fourth. We'd have to play at the jail, though, while he's on duty tonight.
I guess we could stay around that long.
They started down the steps. As they did so, a buggy pulled up in the street. A little old lady in a black dress and shawl was handling the reins. Beside her sat another elderly woman dressed the same way. Bo's eyes suddenly narrowed as he caught a glimpse of bright yellow hair under the second woman's shawl. His instincts shot a warning through him, and he was already reaching for his Colt.
Look out!
Carol LaChance leaped from the buggy, throwing back the shawl so that her blonde curls spilled free around her shoulders. Her hands dipped and came up with a pair of revolvers from the folds of her dress. Brubaker rammed a shoulder against Scratch and knocked him aside. Lead thudded into the deputy's body. Scratch caught his balance and whipped out Bo's Remington. Bo's Colt was already in his hand. The bullets smashed Kara to the ground. Scratch drops to a knee beside Brubaker.
Damn it, 42. How bad are you hit?
I don't know. It hurts like hell.
Scratch pulled the lawman's coat back and reached inside it to check the wound.
I'm glad my dying strikes you as funny.
Oh, I don't think you're dying. Looks like Kara only hit you once and the bullet busted the hell out of that set of dominoes in your coat pocket before it went on in. Slug didn't even penetrate very far. I can feel it with my finger.
Oh, if that don't beat all. Oh, still hurts though.
Meanwhile, Bo had gone on down to the bottom of the steps, keeping Kara covered as he did so. Her blue eyes still held some life in them when he reached her, but it was fading fast.
You just had to have your revenge, didn't you?
You can go to hell. You and Morton both. And when you get there, I'll be waiting for you.
Bo wondered what turned a smart, beautiful young woman like Kara LaChance into a mad dog killer. He knew he would never have an answer. He wasn't sure one even existed. He turned, holstered his gun, and started back up the steps, glad to see that Brubaker was sitting up with Scratch's arm around his shoulders. The deputy didn't look like he was hurt too bad. Maybe they would get that game in after all, before he and Scratch started south toward home.
Sidewinders number 6, Texas Bloodshed, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2012, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Tim Carlin, Mort Shelby, Stephen Carpenter, Yasmin Twazon, Johan Detweiler, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Scott McCormick, Eric Messner, Thomas Penny, Patrick Bussink, Joe Brack, Christopher Graybill, Evan Casey, and Christopher Sheeran. Directed by Johan Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johan Detweiler. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johan Detweiler. Original music by Brian Patton and Johan Detweiler. Title theme by Brian Patton. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Sidewinders, be sure to look for the series Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man, The First Mountain Man, as well as The Last Gunfighter, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio thrillers.
King Yezelnik's armies march across Hans, driving the peasants before them. Lawlessness and chaos reign, spreading throughout the land like a cancer. All hope lies in Branson Garibond, but he is a beaten and broken man. When all the world balances on the brink of destruction, Hans will cry out for a new savior. But will he answer the call? Find out in the thrilling conclusion of the Saga of the First King, Book 4, The Bear. Available now in graphic audio.
Graphic Audio presents Stephen L. Kent. Rogue Clone.
Look, they're showing the Barefoot Contessa at the theater over there. Maybe we can go see it tomorrow? Do you think Ava's a clone?
You're still not going on about that actress. Who cares if she's a clone? How would I know if she's a clone?
I don't know. I mean, I figured you being a clone and all, you might know.
It's not like that. Most clones don't even know that they're clones. They die if they...
Oh, right. I heard about that. They die if they find out they're clones. Is that for real? I heard about that, but I never believed it. How come you didn't die when you found out?
I'm not a normal clone. I'm a liberator. Liberator clones don't have the death reflex.
Aren't liberators supposed to be dangerous?
I make my living beating the shit out of people in an Iron Man competition. I guess that makes me dangerous.
Did you know that you're a fugitive from the law, Harry? Ever heard of the Elite Conscription Act?
Can't say that I have.
It's brand new. Congress just enacted it. It gives all four branches of the military the right to call men back to active duty, whether they want to go back or not.
Just like that? They pass a new law and poof, I'm recalled. I thought Moreland didn't want me in his corps.
Moreland isn't in charge anymore. He was killed in action on Hubble. The aliens he said didn't exist killed him and his division.
No shit.
You know, the aliens that you saw, the ones that don't exist, they're taking over the galaxy. At least we think it's them. No one else has seen them and lived. No one but you.
Grenadiers forward. Rifles cover the rear. Peterson, out here now. Watch the walls.
The what?
They're spiders, damn it. They're crawling up walls.
Oh, shit! They're all around us!
Pull your pistols!
I'll slow the bastards down!
Use grenades. Don't worry about the trip home. Got any rockets left?
It's all I've got left.
Give it here.
I can't...
Shut it, asshole. I'll be right behind. Now, move!
Lieutenant! Those fucking spiders are coming in behind us!
Run! Go! Just go!
Available now in graphic audio.
When Smoke Jensen's wife is shot, he will carve a bloody path through all of Colorado, leading straight to the heart of the villain. If you think you know violence, you ain't seen nothing yet. Don't miss The Visceral Revenge in The Mountain Man number 39. Assault of the Mountain Man. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.